Jeff, thank you for doing this again. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Just driving in now. Yeah, big doubleheader. This night, like opening night, always feels a little bit different. But this one, like, don't you feel, Scotty? Like, there's like a sense of relief attached to this opening night. Like, there's always anticipation and excitement that's baked into the pie for opening night. But is a part of you just kind of saying like, oh, finally, something we can kind of look forward to at the end of a day? Do you feel that way, Scott?
Yes, and there are layers to that, and obviously you and I have a vested interest because of what we do for a living, so there's relief in that sense professionally. And as a Canadian hockey fan, I believe there is relief in, okay, we got here, we saw the plan, but here we are, and it's tangible now. And I think the third level of that, Jeff, would be there's relief that with everything going on in the world and our respective provinces holding their COVID briefings and figuring out what restrictions we're all going to continue to live under, there's relief that you can escape that for a period of time each and every day.
You know what it does? Thinking about this the other day, it kind of reminds us, now that hockey is back, it kind of reminds us what time feels like. Like, we're all sort of living Groundhog Day, and now you have, you know, a reason to look at your watch, a reason to look at the clock, because well, you know there's a game tonight. Like, because at this time, there's going to be a game. Like, you get a cookie at the end. Like, we're all, like, all of our lives have all been, you know, flipped upside down. We are living lives that we thought, you know, a year ago we wouldn't be living. But here we are, making the best of a horrible situation. And now, at least finally, at the end of, for what some is an awful day, at least you can sit down and watch a game at the end of all of it and sort of decompress, you know, watch a hockey game, get excited, and take your mind off things. Like, I really think this is, again, vested interest, of course, employee of Rogers, but it gives you a chance to sort of turn your mind off and forget about the rest of what's going on, the real world, for a couple of hours.
Well, I'm sure you've had that comment from people when you're doing Hockey Central or comments on the podcast. I've had it, I know, over the last 10 months almost, where I've been in my basement doing this show, which is where I am today. I've had people text in saying, hey, like, I know it's tough content-wise for you guys on certain days, but I really appreciate the fact that you are there because I just need something other than reality for a little while, and thank you for providing that. And we get that visually as of today. Jeff Merrick, Hockey Central, 31 Thoughts Podcast, joining us here this morning. And there's a fun associated with it as well. And you know this, and I know it's a topic you've been diving into the last couple of weeks. I think it's a great one as well. Fans can't go to games, but they can get after it on social media, and they're going to in this country. They are, man, and you know it as well as I do because I've heard you comment on it. And I love the discussion that you had last week. We're furthering it this morning about which Canadian fan base other fans are not quite ready for right now. Which one is it to you and why?
Vancouver, there is nothing like Canucks Twitter. And I'm not just saying that because I'm on a Vancouver station. I would say this if I was on in any other market, Canadian or U.S. Like, every social media group has its own timber, has its own tone, has its own way to behave, has its own type of conversation. But there's something so unique about Canucks Twitter. I don't know what it is. Is it like the other side of the mountain phenomenon, the us versus them? Like, I don't know what it is, but there is something that is so distinct about Canucks Twitter that I always say to people, like, yeah, your Twitter, you know, your hockey Twitter can get kind of goofy and all that. And yeah, sure, you get a little bit rabid and get at it sometimes, but there is nothing like Canucks Twitter. And if you're a Winnipeg Jets fan and you've just lived in that Winnipeg Jets bubble and you're playing the Vancouver Canucks, get ready for it. Ditto Toronto, ditto Montreal Canadiens, Ottawa, it doesn't matter. This social media group is like no other group in the entire NHL. There is nothing like Canucks Twitter, Scotty.
It is a unique dynamic, and the way I describe it is that on a daily basis, it cannibalizes itself, but the second somebody from outside that Vancouver Twitter bubble enters into the conversation, all arrows
Look
are
out.
Pointed right back together.
100%. Like, they, like, and that's part of the thing that I like about it the most. Like, they will have open, honest, angry, you know, pushing, shoving contests online with each other. But the minute someone says, you know, I don't think Elias Pettersson is a top 10 center in the NHL, look out. then all of a sudden everybody's heads are like, ah, you know what? How really good is Quinn Hughes? Oh, look out. And everyone sort of turns their heads, gets their shields up, and then everyone becomes one. That's a great way to put it, too. But one of the things I love about it, though, is they're not at each other hard. It's almost like this has been expected out of Canucks Twitter. And that's maybe one of the reasons that I like it so much. Even when I'm a target, you know, Drancer is always going on to me. I remember Luongo used to go at me about Merrick Late all the time when I first got on Twitter. And we'll still give it to me. I love it. That was the very first hate, and that's back in like 2009, I want to say. And it still exists to this day, and I love it.
Yeah, keep it fun. That's my only rule. Keep it fun. You can get after each other, but try to keep it fun. That's what sports rivalry is supposed to be about. Jeff Merrick joining us here this morning as we tee you up for season opening night in Toronto and in Edmonton. Jeff, there are so many prognostications out there, and you can make great cases for all of the Canadian teams, likely outside of Ottawa, to get in. Which Canadian team to you is the biggest wild card, where you see potentially a very high ceiling, but also a very low floor?
Winnipeg Jets. They have high-end skill, and they have holes. They have a real good goaltender. They've got players like Scheifele and Ehlers and Wheeler, and I know we make a lot about Patrick Laine, and does he want to be there, and is he going to stay there? But that's an elite-level goal scorer right there. They have a really good eye for talent. I think situation taught us that. I just don't know what's going to happen to Winnipeg, because as we've seen before, it can all come crashing down. At times, they've been an undisciplined team. At times, they've been a dynamic team. I really don't know what to expect from the Winnipeg Jets this season. Like, for this way, it's one of those teams, Scotty, that no matter what they do, win the division or are right there at the bottom with the Ottawa Senators, I don't think anything would surprise me, because with Winnipeg, I'm just saying, this is jump ball. I have no idea what to expect. They could be brilliant or they could totally flame out.
I don't know if you were going with some type of play on words there with flame out at the end, as you know we are on in Calgary at this time as well. But whether it's Calgary or someone else, look, there are six fan bases right now that believe they should be in the playoffs, and two of them are going to miss in the Canadian division. Where are the most dire consequences for missing the playoffs in your mind?
Ooh, that is it. Well, Toronto. Toronto misses the play. Like, Toronto's expected by most to run away with this division. If that happens, then everything has gone wrong, and it'll cost people their jobs. It'll cost players. It'll cost managers. It'll cost a lot of people their jobs. To say nothing of their reputation. I think Edmonton expectations are high as well, despite the fact of what happened last year against the Chicago Blackhawks. They still think expectations are high for Connor McDavid, for Leon Draisaitl, all that entire crew. Even without Jacob Markstrom, who they thought they had before Calgary scooped them, and coming back with the same netminders, no Oscar Klefbom. I think if they fall out of it, I think that would be a complete shock. I think this might be the last hurrah for this version of the Calgary Flames. Some of it might be by way of necessity with players, coming to the conclusion of their contracts. But I think this might be the last shot that this Flames team has to do something. So I would highlight those, but really I think Toronto and the two Alberta teams might be the ones where if they don't make the playoffs, it's a disaster.
We asked this question yesterday, and it had widespread response, as it should have. The four Western Canadian teams, I consider Winnipeg to be one of those four. Which are you most confident in when it comes to making the playoffs?
Edmonton, a lot of that is because of Connor McDavid, who, all reports and from everyone. I know people that he trained with in the off season in the area where I live, and McDavid, Scotty, is on a different planet right now. We'll see it tonight against the Vancouver Canucks in Game 1. He's a player with a chip on his shoulder. He's a player that's sick of hearing the conversation that he's not the best in the league / the world. And, you know, I took a lot of ribbing from everyone internally at Sportsnet with our predictions. And I said, listen, the Art Ross Trophy winner this year is going to be Connor McDavid. And I think he'll score 95 points even in a 56-game schedule. And I really believe it. Like, I think Connor scores at that pace this season. And I never bet against the greats when they have that singular focus. And McDavid has it this season. I think this is going to be a year where McDavid, you know, plants the flag again and reminds everybody just how great he is.
Everyone who is on the other side of the Oilers conversation points to the blue line and points to the goaltending as the flaws and the flies in the ointment. How good does the goaltending need to be, given what you just outlined about the offensive productivity that exists there?
You know, I think one of the I still like Mikko Koskinen. You know, I mean, Mike Smith, I think a lot of what is going to happen with the Oilers depends on how many games Mike Smith plays versus how many games Mikko Koskinen plays. Just having this conversation with Steve Valiquette the other day on Hockey Central, and he was talking about how, you know, when you have a look at, you know, numbers other than the obvious ones that we all look at, but some of the underlying goaltender numbers, like Mikko Koskinen is a really good goaltender. I know everyone points to that position and the blue line as well, specifically with Klefbom out as the Achilles for this team, and it is. But the emergence of Ethan Bear has been something. The emergence of players like Caleb Jones has been something. So if they can take their next steps, and I don't know if we're totally done making our minds up about Darnell Nurse, then I think the defense is okay, and I think the goaltending, specifically with Mikko Koskinen, if he shoulders most of the load, is going to be fine. If they can get, you know, 9-18 goaltending out of Koskinen, this team is going to be more than just fine. And if he shoulders the most load, but I do understand the criticism. Like, if you're picking holes in the Oilers, you can't pick apart the third line just yet. I mean, that looks to be much improved. You look at the fourth line, and you look at some of the blue liners and the net mining. No doubt that's the Achilles, but I think that's more than compensated for when you look at the damage that the Dreisaitl and McDavid and their crew can do in the top six.
You talked about the greats of the game a moment ago. Alexander Ovechkin is most certainly one of those. Rocket Richard Trophy, are you taking Ovechkin or the field?
The field, because I'd pick Austin Matthews to win that thing. I just think first of all, Ovechkin's playing in maybe the most competitive division in the entire NHL. That East is tough. Like, there's going to be a couple of really good teams that miss the playoffs, like really good teams, Scotty, that don't qualify for the playoffs. That's tough. Austin Matthews is playing in a weaker division. We just mentioned blue lines and net minders. That will certainly factor in. So I will take the Rockets this year, the field. To me, the question would be, would you take Austin Matthews or the field?
Oh, I'll take the field in a heartbeat because it includes Ovechkin, because we always make this a talking point every year, and he's won 7 of the last 8, Jeff.
I know. I always say the same thing. Well, that's the thing. So you think Washington's a fascinating team, and a lot of it's going to rest on, you know, how good Kuznetsov is this season. You know what you're getting out of Ovechkin and Backstrom and TJ Oshie and John Carlson. I think that Zdeno Chara breathes some new life into that squad as well. If Evgeny Kuznetsov can have an improved season and get back to that form that we've seen him play at, then I think Washington's a much improved squad. And yeah, maybe I'll eat my words at the end of the season and say, once again, we shouldn't bet against Ovechkin when it comes to the Rocket Richard Trophy.
I would also say the Canadian Division, while it has, in some people's estimation, weaker blue lines, the goaltending's pretty good in most places. It really is.
Vancouver has questions. Edmonton, even though I mentioned I do like Koskinen, still has their questions. How much is Jacob Markstrom going to play? You like the goaltending in Winnipeg. Matt Murray, the past couple of seasons, hasn't been that Murray we saw winning the Stanley Cup. Carey Price should be better, given he won't have to shoulder most of the load, but he really hasn't put together a great season, although he was really good in the bubble. going back to 2016. So I think the goaltending's okay. I mean, I get that we have, you know, the Vezina Trophy winner sitting there in Winnipeg, and maybe the best goaltender in the entire NHL for the past couple of seasons sitting in Calgary right now. But I still think that there are enough holes in Canadian goaltending, in the Canadian division, that Matthews should be able to dine in.
I look forward to the What's Wrong with Matthews conversation if he doesn't score tonight in the opener.
It'll happen tonight. It'll happen if he doesn't score. Yeah, I know, right? Well, he's one of four players that have scored in every single season opener in the first 4 years of their career. No one's ever scored five. So if he doesn't tonight, it's going to be What's Wrong with Matthews heading into the two games against Ottawa later this week.
Sure, but it's all been regression after the four-goal opener in his rookie campaign. Hey, Jeff, is this the year? It's the longest streak by a mile in the NHL. Is this the year the Pittsburgh Penguins, because of the division, missed the playoffs?
It might be one of them. Like, there's going to be two. There's going to be two, and it wouldn't surprise me. That team, like, I was saying this to Elliot on the podcast, Scotty. Like, I don't know that I've seen a team. You got this generation of the Pittsburgh Penguins. I don't know that I've seen a team that is as highly skilled as the Penguins, but if they don't work hard, they fall apart. Like, that team falls apart if they, like, a lot of times when you have a highly skilled team like that, and we've seen it countless times, you can surf for a while. You can surf on your skill. You can't really do it for a long time, but there are stretches where you can surf on skill and still pick up points. Pittsburgh's fascinating to me because if they don't work hard, then that whole thing caves in. But if they do, they look dynamic. Like, I've never seen a team as highly skilled as the Penguins completely be unable to just surf on the skill. It's a remarkable thing. I don't like betting against Crosby. I don't think anybody does, but this could be the year. You know, Rutherford, you know, stuck his neck out on the goaltender, brought in, you know, another carousel of players as he tries to get this thing going and jumpstart the Penguins again and get them past the first round. But put it this way, even though I don't like betting against 87, it wouldn't surprise me if they're one of the teams that bow out because two real good squads are going out in the East.
I love the fact that it's only partially speculative now, and as of tomorrow, nope, we've got evidence, man. Jeff, this is going to be fun. I really appreciate you taking the time. I can feel your energy. You're as geeked up as everybody for this.
Let's promise you and me right now that we will overreact to everything starting tonight.
Yes, let's make that pledge right now. Overreaction. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Scotty. You be well.